This has been Christina Lori with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Lori from Kingston, Ontario, for that piece. And coming up next, we have a piece that comes all the way from Smithers, BC. But before I play that segment, I just want to do a little talk myself, and specifically that being on the fact that now that we are coming into the fall, city council meetings throughout all municipalities in the Lower Mainland are coming back. That is right. Most city councils take a bit of a pause during the summer, but now if you are a person who lives in Burnaby, a person who lives in New West, Coquitlam, wherever, you have a city council who regularly holds city council meetings, and those agendas are up online as we speak. And one thing that I saw that was interesting was a proposed motion from Councillor Allison Gu of the City of Burnaby. This is going to be a proposed motion that will be given tonight at Burnaby's City Council meeting. And the subject is advocating for Canada's role, peace for the Palestinian people. The purpose of the proposal as written is to seek council authorization to advocate to the federal government to establish a full two-way arms embargo with Israel and transform the Gaza temporary resident visa program to support the safe reunification of Gazan Canadian families and for the city of Burnaby to sign the Apartheid Free Communities Pledge. This is something that I think the situation currently between Israel and Gaza is at a point that I don't think any sort of government, whether it be municipal, whether it be provincial, whether it be federal, can afford to maintain silence in this regard. And I think it's really important for, you know, even someone such as a city councilor to come out and say that the city that I reside in, the city that I represent, needs to take a stand against this. And it's not just happening in Burnaby. It's not just happening in Vancouver. It's not just happening in bigger cities. It's also happening in places such as Smithers, BC, that recently, earlier this month, had a full-on march to advocate for similar things that are being advocated for by the city of Burnaby, by Vancouver. So, or by people within the city of Vancouver, not the city itself. And I thought I would play that piece for all of you. So here is that. This is from Dan Messick from CICK in Smithers, BC.
You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, as the Israeli war intensifies in the Middle East, many in opposition to the expanding war want to ensure that the growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza doesn't get forgotten. Over the weekend, thousands of people from around the world came together in marches and rallies to show their solidarity with those suffering in Gaza, even here in this small part of the world. Carmen Wojak is a member of the Smithers Palestine Solidarity Group, which gathered together to mark the Global March for Gaza along Main Street in Smithers.
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Gaza!
Free, free Gaza!
My name is Carmen Wojak. I'm associated with the Smithers Palestine Solidarity Group. It's a group that started up in January of this year when Heather McPherson came out and we had a meeting and discussion with her. And then after that, the group was formed. That was led by Bronwyn Hobson. She kind of started it. And today we had a march down Main Street in solidarity with the Global March for Gaza. That's happening across the globe, and a march for free Palestine.
Why did you want to take this on? And obviously there's been, you know, more events that you have organized in the last while to bring more attention to what's going on in Gaza. Why are you wanting to bring attention to this here in our little old kind of corner of the world here in Smithers?
I feel like it's an incredibly important thing to bring light to. We have so much in common in terms of the genocide that Canada perpetrated against the indigenous people, the colonization of this land, and also Palestinians are human, and it's an absolute travesty what is happening with the genocide going on in Gaza, the relentless violence and bombing, the starving of 2 million people, and not just Gaza, in the West Bank, and just the colonization of Palestine in general. I just feel like if you're human, it's a very human problem, and it's something that everyone should care about deeply.
Tell me a little about the march today. What did you guys do, and what did you talk about?
The march today was in solidarity with the Global March to Gaza. There, from the June 12th to the 20th, there's been global marches in different countries and in cities. It marks the Samud convoy, which is... There's been thousands of activists and volunteers from Northern Africa, from Canada, from France and the Netherlands that have traveled to Cairo in an attempt to march to the Rafah border and break the siege and open up a humanitarian passage. And the second focus that I wanted to take in was that it's Father's Day. And for the past 18 months, we've been kind of talking about how tragic it is for the women and children that are being killed, that are suffering, that are starving. They're targets of Israel right now. But usually the men are dismissed or their suffering is ignored. And I just wanted to highlight that there's thousands of Palestinian men and fathers and husbands and sons that are also suffering. They're also starving with their children. They're the ones that we see in videos kind of digging through rubble trying to search for survivors. They're the ones that are carrying, you know, one or two more children on their backs as they run away from airstrikes, carrying people to safety. They're the ones that are right now being lured to aid distribution points and then are being gunned down, all in attempts to try and get what little food that they can to feed their starving families. And I just felt like it was really important to highlight them, especially after Palestinian men and Arab men have been demonized and brushed off as terrorists and everything else. So, yeah.
Obviously, in the last few days, we've seen an escalation in all this business. Looks like Israel and Iran are in a war now, firing missiles at each other. You know, again, here, you know, there was talk of what action people can take. What are you hoping to come out of these marches and these actions? And what do you hope people take away from this? What action would you like to see them take and get the message out that this is not sitting well with Canadian citizens in large part, and this is not sitting well with other parts and other people, other citizens of the world?
The message I wanted to try and get out today is to not give up and to not forget Gaza, that Gaza... and Palestine are still the focus of the story. And I feel like, you know, Israel attacking Iran might be a desperate attempt to get the focus off of Gaza. And, you know, if people are too busy watching what's happening between those two countries, that they're going to lose focus on Palestine. But I also think it's important because Israel right now is acting in such a way where it's breaking humanitarian laws, international laws, acting with such cruelty. I just feel that it's a threat to peace and justice, to humanity across the globe, as well as to our collective safety. And it's not just Israel. Any state that wants to act in such a way is unacceptable and is immoral.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Palestine,
free Gaza.
A longtime Smithers resident, Peter Rebergen, spent time in the Palestinian refugee camps and the West Bank. We spoke with him about his experience there and why he felt the need to march.
Peter Rebergen.
And Peter, I know you we've spoken about this before. You've spent time in Palestine, you know, now seeing the escalation, but also, as you mentioned, seeing this type of action, even in a small context. How does it make you feel to be here today?
Well, very conflicted. On the one part, it gives me some encouragement and some hope to think there are still folks who think about humanity and what it could be and should be, and also still quite upset and discouraged at how much pain and horror there is in the world and why we can't get our act together more quickly, more effectively. And so I'm particularly concerned about doublespeak, where we say nice things in print and verbally in our faith traditions and so forth, but then we are more than just reluctant in trying to follow through in that, mm-hmm. In ways that start to have a real impact. Yeah. So we're just really comfortable maintaining the status quo and not really moving things in a direction that is going to make some significant change in the futures of others who are really experiencing some of the horrors of whatever it is, poverty, apartheid, all those injustices. Yeah.
One thing that was mentioned was, you know, wanting for people to take action, to make people feel empowered. What kind of action do you think is needed from, you know, people who've attended today?
Well, there are many different ways to do that, and we can all make various responses, whatever might work. I appreciate those who are able to participate in a march that draws some public attention to this, and hopefully, you know, a response of interest and saying, I'd like to know more, understand more, why do you do these marches, and so that's one thing we can do is education, awareness, mm-hmm. and I always encourage young people too, and I think as an educator, while a grade 12 diploma, university degree doesn't mean that you've done your education, a big part of education is getting out there and actually experiencing, whether it's mountains and lakes, or you know, the difficulties of refugees in various places, what, you know, war-torn countries are going through. So it's those experiences that in my case have been life-changing. I had the opportunity to experience some of that, so yeah, it's going to affect us all if we take it seriously. Everything from go out there and feel it to, okay, my own comfortable lifestyle. I might have to make some adjustments there so that there's a little more justice for others.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since. And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. During the 80s and the 90s, CJSF would come into its own as a serious platform for independent artists and a forum for people to express ideas not present in the mainstream media. Summer 2002. CJSF receives a license from the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission to broadcast over the FM airwaves. February 13th, 2003, 7 p.m. CJSF goes on air at 90.1 FM, and we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
This is Bird Note. Hear this bird? It's a jay, and it's blue. But this is a Steller's jay, not a true blue jay with a capital B. The bona fide blue jay is primarily a bird of the east, or east of the Rocky Mountains at least. Of the many jays in the U.S., these are the only two that sport crests. These jays have similar personalities. Both are raucous and have a bit of a reputation for being bad boys. 19th century zoologist Thomas Nuttall wrote of the Steller's jay that they are as watchful as dogs, and that they come round, follow, peep at, and scold you. And Mark Twain said the blue jay hasn't any more principle than an ex-congressman, and he will steal, deceive, and betray 4 times out of 5. Like their larger cousins, the crows and ravens and magpies, blue jays and Steller's jays are intelligent opportunists. They've adapted to living near people, and they are the masters of the backyard bird feeder. Both have good memories, and they are not shy about asking for a handout. Compare photos of these two birds and hear them again at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host, Danny Nazvetterani, and coming up next, we have a story from Nanaimo, BC. This one is about a new high acuity unit that has opened up in the Nanaimo Regional General Hospital for patients with complex care needs, and is essentially a unit that is designed to help patients with serious health problems who, you know, may need more care than would be provided in a regular ward, but less care than the someone who were to be in the ICU. And I think that is something that is really, really important, is, you know, the prioritizing and maintaining, you know, a breadth of care, because everyone's needs are different. And there is, yeah, a lot of difference in need between someone who is just in a regular ward and to the point where someone is in the ICU. So an exciting story, and CHLY in Nanaimo, BC was able to take a tour of the new facility. This piece is from their LJI journalist, Lauren McKenzie.
This is a CHLY news update. The Nanaimo Regional General Hospital is set to open its newest unit for patients with complex, high care needs in the central Vancouver Island area. This Thursday, the NRGH will open its new High Acuity Unit, or HAU. The completion of the HAU marks the final phase of a $60 million initiative to expand and enhance critical care in Nanaimo. The project also included the new 12-bed ICU, which opened in June of 2023. The HAU is designed to help patients with serious health problems who may need more care than provided in a regular ward, but need less care than provided in the ICU. Each new patient room will feature monitoring equipment, a private washroom, ceiling lifts, and the capability for dialysis treatment. CHY received an early tour of the HAU, along with other media, local politicians, and island health staff. The unit adds 12 new patient beds in private rooms and replaces the 8-bed temporary unit that was set up at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Jane Marriott, clinical lead for the high acuity unit with Island Health, says many of the designs and ideas for the new unit came after managing the aging ICU during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Lesson learned from COVID is that sometimes we need more critical care beds than we may have. And we had to do a lot of navigating in environments that weren't necessarily ideal for critical care patients during COVID, but we did so. Now we are able to do so more readily. We can flip into care for all ICU patients within this department as well.
As beds in the HAU can be flipped to treat intensive care, that means the hospital can now have up to 24 ICU beds. Marriott says another aspect they looked at when designing and building this unit was the comfort of both the patient and their loved ones who may visit them.
The recliner chair can be intertwined with either a patient use or for families to use. Again, that sense of comfort so that patients' families feel welcome and are also comforted in sometimes a really stressful environment. This is not always a fun place to be. No one wants to be here, so we want to make it as soft as it can be when they're here.
Beds in the new unit will also be able to expand to a double bed, allowing a partner or a loved one to lie with them in the bed. The new unit will also have a nurse's station, medication room, physician area, family consultant room, and a staff washroom. Sheila Malcolmson, MLA for Nanaimo Gabriel Island, says this new unit at the hospital will improve healthcare for people in Nanaimo and the rest of the island. Malcolmson says the upgrades to both the ICU and the HAU came after a review of the three ICUs on Vancouver Island in 2013. The report found that the then 8-bed ICU in Nanaimo was one of the most dangerous ICUs in Canada.
Already, this is having an impact on healthcare worker recruitment and retention. Because when we talk with pride about what we are building here in Nanaimo, it helps us retain and recruit the vital healthcare professionals that we need to do this work.
Kelly McComb is a registered nurse and the manager of the ICU, HAU, and respiratory care at the NRGH. She told CHOY this new HAU took her breath away when she first saw it.
Seeing it when it's all been put together here, it's beautiful. It's to see 12 more critical care beds is amazing. To have now 24 critical care beds for Central Island and for NRGH has been amazing.
She says that during the heat of the COVID-19 pandemic in the old ICU, they had to split their 21 patients in critical care in different areas of the hospital. Now the ICU and the HAU are connected in the same tower. McComb says this will allow staff in the two different units to work together more easily.
Oh, it's great. So our staff, we work together. So we are a collaborative team. So staff will come upstairs and downstairs to take care of patients. So we actually, having us all together is a good strategy for just taking care of these critically ill patients all in one place.
She says the staff are fully trained in both units. So, if a patient's condition gets worse at the HAU, they can stay in the HAU rather than being relocated to the ICU. She says the staff are excited to start work in the new unit.
Compared to our last building, our last area, it's amazing. So, the rooms are great. The equipment's brand new. It's big for patients and families. We have triple the size of the rooms that we had in ICU previous. So it's fabulous. We've got a beautiful break room downstairs, an area for people to decompress after we've had a really heavy patient day.
Other construction still underway at the Nanaimo Regional General Hospital is the new BC Cancer Center, which is set to be completed by 2028. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Once again, you are listening to Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you to CHLY and Lauren McKenzie for that piece. We only have about 7 minutes left, but we still have some room for some more news. And this comes from all the way in Winnipeg, Manitoba, about a new game that teaches people the basics of the Anishinaabemowin language. And it is brought to you by the Manitoba Museum. This comes from CHEB FM in Winnipeg from journalist Ryan Funk.
This community update was brought to you by U Radio. At the Manitoba Museum, a new free digital initiative is bridging the cultural learning gap. The game Anishinaabemowin with a Mic introduces players to 21 animals in Anishinaabemowin, also known as the Ojibwe language, Tashina Hulgewish, head of Indigenous Programming and Engagement at the museum, says the initiative is an extension of the museum's long-standing goal of integrating Indigenous languages into its exhibits and programming.
I feel like it's always been a goal of the museum to implement Indigenous languages into all museum spaces. So there are some exhibits that have Indigenous languages alongside English and French, but my team and I wanted to take it a step further and have something that's accessible to everyone.
The game employs a tiered learning approach, starting with animal introductions and progressing to matching and memory challenges to reinforce vocabulary. Hulgewish, who is also a language learner, mentioned her excitement in discovering animal names she hadn't previously known.
I knew maybe like bear, or I grew up with bison, so I knew how to say bison in Anishinaabe Mwen, but it was really cool to learn all the other ones. And
collaboration played a central role in the project. The museum partnered with artist Michaela Gilbert, whose illustrations bring each animal to life, and with Indigenous Protocols advisor Carol, who provided the translations and recordings.
We're very fortunate to have been able to work with both Michaela and Carol.
Hulgewish says the game aligns with Call to Action 14 of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which emphasizes the urgency of preserving Indigenous languages.
And so if we, the museum, can help our community in furthering that initiative, then we'd be very happy.
Community response has already exceeded expectations. Visitors have shared enthusiasm, with some requesting physical versions for travel, while others have asked about expansion to include more vocabulary or even additional languages.
From the beginning, it's always been our goal to have all Indigenous languages that are spoken in Manitoba represented in this type of game.
The museum also plans to incorporate the game into its galleries, potentially through the use of QR codes.
Just to get people playing the game in our galleries, pointing out some of the animals that are represented in the game. So if they come to the museum and they see the bison, then they'll know, like, Mashkude Bishike is the word for bison in Anishinaabe Mwen.
For Hulgewish, the project is just a stepping stone towards greater Indigenous representation and engagement at the museum. She confirmed that they have a long-term vision to grow the game and expand it to other mediums, but says that will depend on the availability of resources. With U Multicultural and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ryan Funk.
Thank you to Ryan Funk for that piece. We only have about a couple of minutes left in this hour, but I want to thank you all so much for listening to Speak Up on this beautiful Tuesday morning. To end off this hour, I'm going to play a track from someone who has just been all over the top of the charts here at CJSF. This track is titled I Deserve Better, and it is by none other than Jan. Coming up right after this track is Democracy Now! At 11 a.m. sharp. Stay tuned. Picnic table.